What happens when brilliant minds, unchecked ambition, and a culture that worships profit at any cost collide? In the early 2000s, Enron, once valued at nearly $70 billion and celebrated as America's most innovative corporation, collapsed into bankruptcy with breathtaking speed. The implosion destroyed billions in shareholder value, vaporized retirement accounts, and left thousands jobless. This wasn't just a corporate failure. It was a masterclass in how intelligence without integrity becomes a weapon of mass destruction. Business schools had praised Enron's creativity. Wall Street had worshipped its growth. Politicians had courted its CEO. Yet beneath the gleaming facade lay a rotten core of accounting tricks, ethical compromises, and outright fraud. The scandal became the defining corporate catastrophe of the 21st century, foreshadowing the 2008 financial crisis and exposing a toxic truth. When greed meets genius in a system designed to reward appearances over reality, disaster isn't just possible, it's inevitable. Ken Lay seemed an unlikely villain. Raised in Durpore, Missouri, he cultivated an image as a humble, religious man who became Houston's philanthropic golden boy. But beneath this modest veneer lurked powerful entitlement and dangerous passivity. When Lay became CEO of Houston Natural Gas in 1984, he operated on one principle: get big fast. The merger with InterNorth created the nation's largest gas distribution system, but aggressive expansion nearly bankrupted the company by 1987. His leadership style, avoiding tough decisions while hobnobbing with presidents, planted seeds of destruction. He wasn't evil, he was weak, and in corporate America, weakness at the top can be more dangerous than malice. While Enron struggled as a pipeline company, its secretive Valhalla oil trading division generated substantial profits through increasingly risky practices. Under Louis Bourget and Thomas Mastroianni, the division concealed massive losses through fake trades and two sets of books. When oil prices crashed in 1987, the fraud exploded, an $85 million charge. The chilling part? This scandal should have been a wake-up call. Instead, it became a blueprint. The company learned it could hide problems, lie to stakeholders, and emerge relatively unscathed. Though Rich Kinder brought needed discipline, Enron's fundamental problem remained. It needed a visionary who could reimagine the business for a deregulated world. Jeffrey Skilling reimagined natural gas as a financial commodity rather than a physical product. His gas bank solved a critical market problem. Utilities wanted price certainty, producers needed upfront cash, and banks wouldn't lend. Enron could play banker because it had already sold the gas at fixed prices, creating a trading market through derivatives. His most consequential move was demanding mark-to-market accounting, which let Enron book the entire estimated value of multi-year contracts immediately rather than as cash arrived. This created a dangerous treadmill. Once all potential profits were booked up front, showing continued growth meant constantly increasing deal volume. The SEC approved mark-to-market accounting in January 1992 with minimal resistance. Enron immediately applied it retroactively to 1991, boosting Skilling's division's profits by $25 million. Champagne flowed. Nobody asked the obvious question: what happens when the deals stop growing? Jeff Skilling's philosophy was brutally simple. All that matters is money. You buy loyalty with money. He hired guys with spikes, individuals with singular talents regardless of personal flaws. Egomaniacs, social misfits, and backstabbers were welcome if they possessed needed skills. He deliberately pitted executives against each other, believing tension produced better ideas. The Performance Review Committee sparked fierce debates. Traders making quick millions versus originators spending months on complex deals. Every ranking required unanimous agreement, leading to horse trading sessions running from 8 a.m. past midnight. While Skilling called this rewarding innovation, many saw it encouraging ruthlessness and greed. Skilling's workaholic tendencies defined the culture. He negotiated his employment contract while his wife was in labor. When he severely injured his ankle rock climbing, he delayed surgery for a month to complete a business trip. By 1996, his division contributed $280 million to Enron's earnings. His presence on the trading floor was announced like royalty. Jeff's on the floor. This culture of extreme ambition and moral flexibility set the stage for increasingly questionable financial practices. Enron's fraud was a steady corruption of values. CFO Andrew Fasto, who joined at 28, became Enron's Wizard of Oz, creating prosperity illusions through bewildering off-balance sheet vehicles. His global finance team consistently delivered last-minute solutions to earning shortfalls, earning adoration from Skilling and Lay. But compensation wasn't enough. Fasto found additional ways to enrich himself. Even in high school, he craved not excellence, but its appearance. Fasto's group became an internal investment bank, raising approximately $20 billion annually through off-balance sheet vehicles, allowing Enron to fund aggressive growth without visible debt, essentially defying financial gravity. His deals served simple purposes disguised by complexity: keep debt off books, camouflage existing debt, book earnings, or create operating cash flow. His crowning achievement was establishing private equity funds named LJM, after his family, that he would manage while serving as Enron's CFO, a breathtaking conflict of interest the board inexplicably approved, allowing Fasto to profit personally from transactions with Enron. Jeff Skilling drafted his first resignation letter just 3 months into his CEO tenure in 2001. As Enron's stock plummeted by half, he appeared disheveled, drinking at local bars. On August 14th, he shocked everyone by resigning, citing personal reasons while insisting the company was in excellent shape. Days later, Vice President Sharon Watkins discovered alarming problems in Enron's hedges and warned Lay the company could implode in a wave of accounting scandals. October brought rapid collapse. Enron announced a $618 million quarterly loss and $1.2 billion equity reduction. The Wall Street Journal exposed Fasto's partnerships, triggering an SEC inquiry. New CFO Jeff McMahon discovered they couldn't roll their commercial paper. Without it, they couldn't pay basic expenses. A desperate Dynegy merger collapsed when delayed SEC filings revealed catastrophic losses. On December 2, 2001, Enron filed the largest bankruptcy in U.S. history, years of deception exposed in mere weeks. Enron's collapse led to charges against 33 individuals. Andy Fasto received 10 years and forfeited $30 million. Lay and Skilling's trial ended with guilty verdicts. Lay died 41 days later. The scandal spawned the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, strengthening corporate governance and fraud penalties. Yet these reforms didn't prevent the 2008 financial crisis, where similar deceptions emerged on a larger scale. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Enron wasn't an aberration. It was a warning we ignored. The same incentives that drove Enron's executives still dominate corporate America. Stock options tied to short-term performance, cultures rewarding appearances over substance, boards rubber-stamping decisions. We've learned to spot obvious frauds, but subtle corruptions persist. The real lesson isn't about accounting rules or oversight. It's about what happens when we worship intelligence without wisdom, reward cleverness without character, and measure success solely by stock price. The smartest guys in the room were also the most destructive. True wisdom isn't just knowing how to win, it's knowing what's worth winning and what lines should never be crossed.